The landscape of medicine is rapidly evolving, and AI is at the forefront of this transformation. While some doctors fear being replaced by AI, others are using the opportunity to create an intersection of both fields. In this episode, I sit with Dr. Paulina Mensa, a medical doctor and AI practitioner, to discuss her unique path and also groundbreaking AI projects in healthcare. Enjoy today's episode. Okay, so hello everyone and welcome to the TechSurf podcast, where we navigate today's tech wave one electrifying conversation at a time. I am your host, Raymond Cluche, and today we have Dr. Paulina Buediwa Mensa. I hope I got the name right. Did I get it right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, so we have Dr. Paulina Buediwa Mensa on the TechSurf podcast today to talk us through her very interesting intersection of her life. You know, she's a doctor, at the same time an AI practitioner, and it's quite intriguing to see how she's mixing both of them. So first and foremost, thank you so much for accepting to join the TechSurf podcast, Dr. Paulina. We're really grateful to have you.
It's my pleasure.
Great. All right, so in the shortest amount of time, I'd like you to, you know, introduce yourself in the briefest amount of time, a minute or two. Who is Dr. Paulina? If we stop you on the road or if someone should ask of you, what are you going to say? Who is Dr. Paulina, to be precise?
So Dr. Paulina is, well, if someone stops me by the road, I'm probably just going to say Paulina, but yeah.
Okay.
I'm the curious person. Very driven. I like to explore, try new things. And that sort of curiosity and exploration is what led me to both medicine and tech, right? Because I was curious about the human body and how it works. And that's how that's why I decided to go into medical school. And then for tech too, I was curious about computers in childhood. So, in a nutshell, I'd say that's me.
Interesting. So I did a bit of digging around you. You know, the best way to find out about someone is to Google, right? So I decided to Google you. And it took me back to an article way back in 2014 where you were in a creative, you were in an essay writing competition by UBA, and I saw you holding, you know, your award and everything. And I'm like, okay, someone who is very creative, one will assume, you know, that probably she was going to go down a traditional, maybe the lawyer, journalist, creative writer, author, that kind of stuff. And then today you say you're an AI practitioner and medical doctor. Walk us through your childhood. What was it like growing up, and when did the creative process, or when did your creative interests pop up along the way?
Okay, so I often joke around that, you know how they say left brain people do the technical stuff and the right brain people do the creative stuff. So I say, well, I'm using both sides of my brain.
Right.
I think we don't have to limit ourselves to one thing. If you have the talent, why not use it, right? You don't have to define yourself by just one particular topic, right? So growing up as a child, I think I was a precocious child. I was the kind of child adults said asked too many questions, and I'm always involving myself in adults' conversations, that sort of thing. I enjoyed reading. I think that's one thing that reading marks my childhood. I read so many things, and newspapers. I was reading books that were not considered appropriate for my age even, right? So I think that made me more and more curious about the world around me. I just decided to hold on to that curiosity, right? And I grew up in a farming background, so I would go out and then like look at the plants and the trees, and then try and relate it to what I was studying in school. And I think that's where my interest in biology started from, and eventually that led me to human biology and then getting into medicine. And for computers, the first time I saw a computer, my father was doing some work with some people from outside, and he brought one home. It was a white computer, right? I mean, the big type, you know. And then nobody was supposed to touch it, right? It was like this whole access thing, right? But then when he was not around, I'd go and fidget with it. And I remember it was so cool using DOS at that time, command prompt, and then you'd insert something and the computer would respond. I was like, wow, this is cool, right? Okay. Yeah, so I think that's where it started from. But then I wasn't encouraged that much because of my socioeconomic background. I'm not from a wealthy background, so it was unusual. And I grew up with the extended family, so most of the time would be like go to the kitchen and stuff like that, right? So I couldn't really pursue it that much in childhood, but I never lost interest. So when I got to high school, I think all those things came together. So the curiosity, the creativity, you know, I told you I was a reader. So one thing about reading a lot is that it does make you creative, right? I mean, you also want to tell stories. Right. And so I decided to use that. That's how I got into the essay competition. And then after that, I was really focused on med school because, I mean, it's tough. But when I could, especially in my clinical years, I would code a bit. It was difficult staying consistent, but I tried as often as I could, and I decided to take a lot of courses on Coursera because I got interested in machine learning. It was a new concept, and then there was a conference organized in Accra by. Then it was called ERW, now it's called Black Sisters in STEM. So I attended that. And I think from there, my interest in the field grew. So after med school, I got an opportunity to work in data science with the Kumasi Center for Collaborative Research into Tropical Medicine. And that's how it's been, and other opportunities coming along. Yeah, so that's my journey in a nutshell.
Interesting. That's actually a very good brief one, if you ask me. So med school, I want to assume that you are, as in our local parlance, we say you are shark. You're probably the brainy girl who was always reading and everything, and then your parents maybe pushed you to go and read medicine. Was that the case, or you naturally, although you said you had an interest for biology from being a farm girl and all that, would you say there was a bit of a push from family because you happened to be very smart to just get into medical school?
Yes, there was, but it didn't make it so hard for me because, as I said, there was the interest. But I remember it was difficult for me choosing. Actually, then I wanted to choose between medicine and business admission in attaché. Right, so it was maybe like tech person. Yeah, which is funny. Because I remember, so Ashesi has this innovation experience. I think they still do it. Right. And in high school, I participated and I did very well. I was getting a lot of applause. I think I led my group to win the challenge. And so, yeah, it sparked my interest in that area. So I was like, yeah, I want to do more of it. But yeah, there was that push also because I say there was a need in the family, right? People with chronic diseases in the family and all of that, which has actually been me getting into medicine has been helpful in that regard. Wow. So I thought about all of that and I was like, yeah, I mean, let me go to med school.
Nice. So take us through medical school. You know, I know medical school to be very hard. I know people try to downplay the amount of work involved in going through a six-year program to become a doctor. If you can summarize what medical school was for you, maybe your highest highs and your lowest lows, and how you were able to overcome them.
Okay, so I would say my highest high was when I won a scholarship from the MTN Foundation. That took care of my clinical years, and I am very grateful to them. My lowest, I guess it was when we would take tests and like I'm on edge wondering what the results would be, right? Especially in the clinical years, it was crazy. But, and the thing with med school was, I mean, the thing with medicine is there's a lot to learn. I think any medical student would tell you that. And you have to remember so many things. And I wouldn't say I have a great memory. Really, the main thing that was going for me was like, I like to read a lot, but I mean, sometimes you get tired. One thing about me was as I'm saying, I didn't completely ignore my hobby. So that was an outlet for me. Yeah, so that's, it is hard in the amount of information you need to know and remember and the standard that's expected of you, right? Like sometimes I'd go home or somebody meets me, they know I'm a doctor, and then they ask random questions. Sometimes they've been related to medicine, but they expect you to know the answer. And they're like, if you don't know, they're like, but you're a doctor. And so there's always that sort of pressure. That was med school for me.
Okay. Before we even get into techie stuff, what would you say med school has done for you as a person, your life, in terms of you? One would say maybe it's made you more disciplined, it made you more empathetic, it's made you more curious, since you're already clearly a curious person, one who will go and use her dad's PC when he's not at home. We probably hope he's listening to you here. But yeah, tell us, what has made, like, what impact has med school had on your life?
I think the first thing is it's made me see the importance of taking your health seriously. One thing I've noticed that a lot of young people are coming in with chronic conditions that were reserved, let me quote unquote, reserved for older people in the past, right? And it tells me that even as I take care of people, I have to make sure that I'm taking care of my health seriously. Anyone around me will tell you that I'm a health nut. Yeah, so I think that's the main thing. Also, another thing is I think it taught me humility, right? Because you meet people from all walks of life, right? And you never know what's bothering someone, right?
It's just and one disease can just
I know. It taught me humility. Also taught me confidence, because I've had people walk into the consulting room and they're like, they're looking for the doctor and it's me. And I've heard people say, but this small girl, right? Especially the really older ones. But then when they see how I engage with them, they see the confidence with which I interact with them, and they are satisfied with the care. And now they're like, oh, wow, you're great. I want to see you the next time. Some might be like, nah, I only want to come on the days that you are consulting, right? It's built my confidence too. I think those are the main things that med school has done for me so far.
Right. Now, medicine is broad, and medicine as a career, what was in your mind when you were getting into medicine? Were you, everyone says they want to, you know, do childcare, you know, that's pediatrician, right? Everyone wants to be a pediatrician, or people want to go into surgery. What was it for you? What was the main thing for you when you were getting into medicine?
When I was getting it, I think actually I remember as a child, I saw a pediatrician and I liked how they took care of me. So it was, I wouldn't say I wanted to be a pediatrician, but they inspired me, right? Like the way they were so friendly to the children. But when I got into medical school, I think my interests were more towards surgery, radiology, family medicine. I have not yet began a specialization. If I do, you'll find out. Yeah. but unfortunately, not PDX. I got to, sometimes I remember going to the bank and someone was like, you look like a pediatrician. I don't like that stereotype. No, not all female doctors want to be pediatricians.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Okay. So you started, you know, STEM is wide, you know, you started probably a boot camp, learning how to code and all that. Then you went on Coursera, did a few AI courses and all that. As wide as STEM is, why would you say you zoned into data and AI? Is it because there is potential there to intersect with your current career, or it was just a matter of, okay, AI is a new thing, or AI is about to take over the world, I'll just, you know, your curiosity led you there eventually? Did your other profession have a main influence on your decision to zone into AI and data analysis?
So I'd say I told you about the conference I attended. That was actually the first time right. I had to do anything related to machine learning. When I heard the name, I thought it sounded interesting, machine learning, right? As opposed to human learning. So I did a bit of digging around it and it seemed interesting. And thankfully in healthcare too, there's a lot of data generated. So I could get some of the data to play around with, right? So I think different things sort of directed me towards that part. The fact that there was the opportunity, the fact that I was given a role, I said, in data analysis, data science, and eventually in AI, also with KCCR. So, and I find the field interesting. I mean, if I started and I didn't think it was fun, I would have stopped. But yeah, I mean, the first time I was learning Python, my idea was to go into software engineering, but then it just happened that I chanced upon machine learning and then I found it interesting. So
okay, perfect. Okay, so someone listening to us will say she's a medical doctor at the same time an AI data practitioner. How does that work? Does she do a few hours in the hospital and then goes to code, or she works into the night? Just walk us through, what does that look like in terms of you balancing these two careers?
Yeah, so it is challenging. I would say one thing I realized was to go at my own pace and not to compare myself with those who were doing one thing entirely, right? And because medicine is demanding, it takes a lot of your time. Data science is also demanding. So I decided to forge my own paths, not be pressured. So like, let's say I'm talking to my friends who are full-time techies and they're like, oh, this new thing, and I know this new thing. I wouldn't feel pressured. I was like, okay, I'll eventually learn it, right? Let me focus on what I'm doing now. Another thing is I had to be very cautious as to how I spend my time, because I do not have as much time as other people would get to spend on their craft. So when I'm seeing patients, it takes 100% of my attention. But when I'm done, or when I have a break, or when there's less activity in the hospital, I do take my laptop to work. So then I'll sit down and then do something else. So when I get back from work, I have to cut on the hours I sleep, which is not very healthy. But I had to do that sometimes to get projects done, and so it requires discipline.
I was going to get there, because the doctor said it's not the best thing to do to have less hours of sleep, but we all have to come to accept the fact that there are times where we have to sacrifice some sleep to do some work one way or the other, right? How would you say you're balancing that with your everyday life? Are you still writing? Are you still being creative? Or you've just abandoned all that and it's just data science, medicine, data science, medicine? What is life outside all of this bubble?
So So I have periods of time where I focus on one thing. So there are periods of time where I am fully focused on medical stuff, right? Because it demands that I pay attention, which means that my data science aspect suffers a bit. And then there are times where I can also focus on that. So I think that's the way I've been balancing. It's not every time that you can split your time equally at both areas. But one thing about me is I do take my off day seriously, my vacation times. My friends will tell you that when I'm off, I'm off. So that's how I get to rejuvenate. I still write. I write on Medium. It's not as frequent, but I have recently been writing for an organization called Liaison. Actually, before I hopped on this podcast, I was preparing an article for them. I contribute an article every month, and I think currently that's the pace that helps me. If at any point in time I can do more, then I can do more. So that's how I balance everything. Try and do what I can when I can.
And how about physical activity? Maybe, I don't know, meeting friends? Are you a social being, or you like to be in your own space? What does that look like?
I had a very small circle. I find that to not be too distracting. I do travel when I can. I do take trips every now and then. I like to keep my circle solid but high quality, right? So quality over quantity, people I can dial. So it's not like I'm always jumping to everybody's party or everybody's invite. I barely go for weddings. Well, my friends are not getting married for me. I do engage in social activities. I'm just selective as to where I'd be. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So let's bounce back into tech, and for that matter, tech and medicine in Ghana. Would you say the medical space is ready for the AI, or the way AI is accelerating? Would you say the medical field in Ghana is ready to embrace that pace? If it is, tell me what it is that they are doing to embrace it. If it's not, how do you think we can be able to work together, both as techies and as medical doctors, to bridge that gap?
So I would say that there is an increase in awareness compared to when I was in med school. Yes, there is definitely increase in awareness. I'll talk about KCCR because that's where I've had some experience. I know we've been involved in organizing webinars. Not so long ago, I think in the latter part of 2023, there was a workshop organized by the Ghana College of Physicians and Surgeons, and AI was a hot topic over there. I think there's even been two times, if I remember correctly. So yeah, the medical community knows about AI. And actually, I do get a number of DMs from medical students and medical doctors who are interested in AI. Some of them have already taken steps to develop skills in that field. So yeah, there is an increase in awareness. I would say that for my generation, even more so. And so, it's nascent, but there is some growth, and I'm sure it's going to get bigger.
Okay. We're not going to zone into any specific hospital, but generally people have this feeling that, you know, the systems in most medical institutions may not always favor them. We've seen the pictures in some of our top institutions whatsoever. And now here's this new technology coming in and all that. And people are wondering, do they have the infrastructure or systems to be able to embrace these things? Do you think that there's something that we can do as a nation to be able to maybe use these AI systems at a larger scale, but at a more affordable, you know, rate, so as not to break bank whilst, you know, understanding the kind of system or structures that we have in our medical facilities. Yeah.
The importance of having people who understand the local context go into emerging technologies is that they will be able to find solutions that work for their local systems. Right. It's not everything that's going on in more developed countries that we can just copy and paste over here. It's not going to work. So one reason why I'm happy that there's an increasing interest in AI amongst young doctors and medical students is that we would be able to find solutions that are simpler and that we can adopt and start working with before we start developing grander things. So I think it, yeah, it first starts with me looking at the simpler things that we can work with. And then eventually we can, when we see results, I mean, It already boosts confidence in the technology, and then we can do bigger things. Well, I'd also say that government has a role to play in encouraging, the adoption of AI in healthcare in Ghana. The government has to be more favorable to companies and people who are trying to develop these technologies and to implement them in our healthcare facilities. If they are facing too many barriers, they are going to give up because already it is hard to develop good AI for healthcare.
Right.
And it is even harder to try and implement it in a place like Ghana.
Right.
So the government has a role to play, and we want to see action and results instead of talk, because we know that there's a lot of talk in this country. Right. Yeah. So that's what I'd say.
Impressive. Now, you are in the field. You are constantly dealing with a lot of the research stuff that are going on there. Not to necessarily take a specific one. What are some of the interesting things that you have seen so far in your AI or data analytics journey that has to do with, or that, yeah, that has to do with, you know, medicine, maybe one or two? And what's the use case, and how do you find that to be very beneficial in the long run to the medical society?
Okay, so I mean, there are lots of interesting developments globally, but I would want us to focus on what's happening in Africa.
Right.
So I mean, there are a lot of companies doing. So, for example, chatbots for maternal health. We have Jacaranda Health doing something like that. We have in Ghana, we have Mino Health developing tools for radiology. We have Intron Health in Nigeria, and I think they are also establishing a presence in Ghana, using NLP for transcription of clinician notes. So those are areas that say we are seeing some progress. A lot of the AI in across Africa right now, it's mostly NLP stuff. So chatbots, I'm seeing a number of chatbots. I'm seeing a number of tools for radiological diagnosis. I would say that's where a lot of the hype is globally too. So I think that's what I'm seeing so far. Of course, robotic surgery and stuff is not that common here.
And speaking about that, when do you think we can possibly get there as Africa? You know, because one will say a joke, imagine that you have a robot that is, you know, going through a normal surgery with you and the light goes off, because we are in a country or we are in a continent that seems to suffer in that area. When do you think we can possibly get there? You know, if let's say you were a prophet or a prophetess, if you could prophesy into the future.
Well, that's a very difficult question.
Fair enough.
Honestly, laparoscopic surgery is not even common in Ghana. And that's like, I was speaking with a doctor in Germany 2 days ago, and he's like, yeah, he can count. He's been a surgeon for about 10 years, and he's done only like 4 open surgeries, right? Almost everything they do is laparoscopic, whereas in Ghana, the laparoscopic surgeries rather the in the minority. So talking of timelines, what I can say though is this wave of AI is our chance. You know how people say we missed out on the previous industrial revolutions, and so this is chance for Africa to catch up with the AI revolution. And I'm hoping that have clinicians and even the general public, people who would be interested to make tools that would solve African problems and implement them. I know there are people working. The ecosystem is not very favorable for them, but we have people who are dedicated and are working to make sure that we are able to catch up, right, and not get too far behind the rest of the world. As to giving specific timelines, I don't know if hopefully by 2030, hopefully by 2030, we would have some AI tools and some facilities. I can't say every facility in the country, but at least some quote-unquote basic AI tools that are used routinely in some facilities. You know, they say physicians or medical doctors tend to be skeptic. So maybe I'm not as optimistic as the average person. Maybe that's where I'd that'd be my forecast. Yeah.
That's okay. Okay, so I know you are a woman who is in STEM. I've seen you. You are part of a lot of, you know, women organizations, and you're also a doctor. And I have had a lot of ladies on my pod, and I am, maybe people listen to this will find it to be weird, but I am a strong advocate for women also excelling, because I grew up in a household where my sister wanted to become an engineer and my dad didn't stop her. She became the engineer. She's worked. She's rubbed shoulders with guys. She's done the typical manly stuff, you know. And I know that the conversation is getting better. The narrative is changing. We are seeing more women in tech, women in this, women in that. I've never really known there to be much of a bias in women in medicine. I'm just saying, because I've almost every time I've gone to the hospital, I've seen a woman who is there. But you are in the industry and you are now dealing with, you know, two different roles. How would you say the current narrative of women in tech or women in medicine and all that is going? And how do you also lend your voice to, you know, push that forward?
Okay, so I'll start with women in medicine. Yes, there are a lot of women in medicine now. I would say even Ghana, there might be, we are even getting to the place where there are more women in medical school than men. So that is not a problem. The problem is women in some specialties like surgery or demanding specialties. Not that the women don't have the interest, but just that some of these specialties are not, the system is not favorable for women who would like to combine and taking care of their families with advancing. And I know that in some places in the world, there are social systems in place to help. So like there's paid maternity leave, and you know, there is some change. So I believe that that change is, we start to do something about it in Ghana, we might be able to see more women get into those specialties. And actually, there are studies that women surgeons are achieving better outcomes in terms of postoperative prognosis, the time to recovery for patients who are treated by women surgeons as opposed to male surgeons. There are studies that have been published. There are benefits for all of us when we have women get into such specialties. Also, when you have people from different perspectives, because I mean, in the world, we generally have, well, biologically speaking, we have men and women, right? So it's almost an equal split. So when you have both factions represented, it is good for all of us. So yeah, that's what I'd say. It's difficult because medicine is a legacy system. So it's difficult to create change. But I think if we start conversations and we can mix up policies to support women to get into these fields without feeling guilty about, you know, taking care of their families. And for women in STEM, I think there's progress too. Just recently, I was looking at some statistics and about 25% of women are in STEM. But I do see initiatives. One thing I'd say is for the women, it's not as hard to get into STEM as it was some years ago. So the women have to take the opportunity. I've had some ladies text me and say, oh, they're interested. But I realized that a lot of people just like to say they are interested and they are not ready to put in the work. I mean, right now there are lots of opportunities. You can't expect to be spoon-fed. In the other time, I was talking to someone, like, he's even annoyed because he's not seeing anything about men in STEM. Right now, all the opportunities are going to the women. So women, we don't have a lot of excuses right now. We have to take up the opportunities. Another thing too, I'll say is that I've seen a lot of organizations and initiatives crop up. Some of them are doing a lot of work, but there are others too who are not doing much work and are just collecting grant money. And founders are doing their own thing. And we have to be careful that we support the organizations that are actually doing work and not just hyping themselves and hyping up their numbers, right? That's what I'd say. I think, yeah, there's a lot more work to be done, especially in the rural areas. A lot of the opportunities are concentrated in the urban areas. So we have to make sure that we are including those with less social opportunity so they don't miss out.
Right. I like asking my guests this question because it gets us to think. It's not like we have any power, but if you had the chance to redo your entire medical / AI data practitioning all over again, if there's anything you could have done better, if you had the chance, what would it be?
I think I would have started early in the AI aspects of things, or in the tech aspects of things. I started late. I mean, I told you I had interest. I left it for a bit to just focus on medicine. And then I just picked it up in my clinical years. So I would have definitely paid more attention to that. I'm sure there were a few activities I could have cut off in medical school to focus. Yeah, so I think that's what I would have done differently. I would also have put myself out there earlier, like from the start. One thing I have learned is to not despise small beginnings. So I wouldn't have been shy to start documenting my experiences so others know. Because I remember a colleague of mine was like, you just got into tech like 1 year ago and then already you're like getting opportunities and all that. I was like, nah, I didn't get into tech 1 year ago. I've been doing this for a while now. I was just not talking about it. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that would have helped me and helped others also. So I think those are the main two things.
That's great. What are your two, or what are the best two projects that you've worked on as a data scientist, as an AI engineer, as a data analyst? Any two techie projects? It could be software engineering focus, ML focus, DevOps, whichever. Just take us through it. Maybe first the use case, how the idea came about, and what was the outcome? Was it something that just was for research purposes, or is something that you feel like you'd like to extend? Just in a few words, yeah.
Okay, so for data analysis, I analyzed some data on aging in sub-Saharan Africa. It was data collected by the World Health Organization. We had about almost 10,000 entries. And I'm proud of that project because it was my first sort of major thing to do as a data analyst. And I did not study statistics, but I had to learn a lot of things on the go. And I'm happy that Plus One decided that it was suitable for publication. So
right.
That's in the health data analysis aspect. There's another thing too that I created that is not really ML based, but people have been using it. So maybe yes, I created this map so people can locate health facilities in Ghana and then their contact numbers. And I went to check the analytics and I realized that, oh, people have been checking it out. So it's simple. It wasn't like my most technically demanding project, but it seems to be useful. For technically demanding, so I've been building this tool for diabetes mellitus management, supposed to help junior doctors. It incorporates. Then when I started building it was GPT-3.5 API that was the highest ranking, but now I'm in this 4. Mm-hmm. So I do have some work to do on it to update it, but the few people who've seen it and who've used it are quite optimistic, and the response I've gotten is encouraging. So yeah, I think top of my head, those are the things that I can talk about. I do have some more projects in the pipeline. I do have some collaborations also coming up. So
That's nice. You did mention that you like traveling, and I saw your recent post. I don't know where you went to. You look very nice. The background was giving, like we say in Gen Z lingo. Where did you go to, and do you do that often? Was it an internal travel? It looked like it was a travel outside of the country. Do you do that often? Yeah.
Okay. That was in Italy. So that was in Como. So that was the lake Como in the background. I have been traveling internally mostly. I completed my house job in November, so I decided to use December to travel a bit. Some few countries in Europe that I had been wanting to visit. Yeah. And also to do some work. I did do some AI work.
Doctor has to relax. Next time on your vacation, I will check to be sure that you are not working. But for me, yeah, I just find it to be very nice how you own your story. You know, people tend to get to a particular place in life and then they don't want to, you know, accept the fact that they actually came from, for the lack of a better word, impoverished backgrounds, but then they've been able to build what they have now, and now they're proud. And I'm sure your parents are so proud of you. When you look back, what are some of the fondest memories you have, and what are some of the things you probably say to your younger self growing up, not having some things? What are some of this? What conversation would you have with a younger Paulina, basically, what you're trying to say?
To my younger self, I'd say, I was very shy growing up. One core memory I remember was in Ashesi during the innovation experience, where one of the facilitators, he was called Errol Lawson, he applauded me in front of everyone that I speak with conviction. And I think that helped me get over my shyness. I was very shy because of, you know, my background was not very popular. I knew that, like, how people go to Ashesi. And also, I went to Wesley Girls. You have a lot of people coming from wealthier backgrounds. So, I tell my younger self not to be shy, because there's nothing to be shy about. I mean, nobody chooses where they are born and who they are born to, right? What you have to ask yourself is, what am I doing with the cards that I've been dealt? So, I think that's it. I mean, right now, I'm rubbing shoulders with people who are from more privileged backgrounds. And so, I think that's what I tell myself.
Nice. For you as a techie and also medical doctor. What is the exciting future you have for you? When you look forward, what does the brand Paulina Mensa want to achieve in the long run? Maybe the next 5 or 10 years, having intersected these two fields, maybe, I don't know, become the World Health, the WHO or the World Health Organization technical overseer. I don't know. You tell me, what is the dream? What's the dream for you?
Okay, so I want to do good work. That's it. I'm not so hung up on titles. Maybe this might sound like such an anti-climax, but that's the truth. I told you that one thing I've learned as a doctor is that we have to take care of ourselves. I'm not so hung up on big titles by any means necessary. I just like to see results. And so I want to see healthcare delivery in sub-Saharan Africa much improved, with AI playing a prominent role. I think that would be my dream. In whatever capacity I get to see that, that's a spite from me. Also, I want to make sure that I'm taking care of myself and the people around me, the people I care about, are also well taken care of. As to how that path might look like, I'm not so hung on a specific role, a specific title. What I'd say is that I do grab opportunities. That's one thing about me. So if there's an opportunity, I'm going to go for it. But at the core of it, that my core mission is to see an improved healthcare delivery in sub-Saharan Africa.
We're about to conclude, and I have just two questions left. What's your favorite quote in life? It could be a biblical quote, it could be a philosophical quote. Do you have one?
I have a number of quotes.
Okay. Since you have a number, give us your top
okay,
three.
So since you mentioned today, I was looking at one actually. So maybe this is a good opportunity. So there's this quote by Wangari Maathai. She started the Green Revolution in Kenya. She has inspired me a lot. Mm. She was like, so she has this autobiography. It's titled Unbound. Those who've not read it should read it. She said, all they wanted was to humiliate and intimidate me. They achieved the former, but never the latter. So that, yeah, that's one of the things I think about. I also pick up quotes from serials and movies. There was one I saw recently. Which movie was that? I think it was Billions. Yeah. So there's this scene where Chap Roots was talking to this tall basketball player, and he was like, people like us go for the shot, because if we don't, who will? If we don't take the shots, who will? I'm paraphrasing. Yeah, so those are some of my quotes. I also have a lot of quotes from scripture in my personal chest. Top of my head, those are the two. You didn't tell me you asked, so I couldn't go deeper that way.
Don't worry, that's fine. I just wanted to just see what keeps you going. My personal mantra, that this is by me, is to stay resilient and go for gold. And I use that, it's actually based on scripture, 2 Corinthians 4:7, about. So every time I'm talking with people, I try to just get to know what really keeps them going and how they, you know, they stay afloat, because life is a very interesting winding road. I didn't tell you too much about myself. You've probably seen a few stuff on my LinkedIn, but I grew up in Ghana. We used to travel alone when we were kids, but then I did my entire education back in Ghana, took the decision to go and study data science in French in France. Already, I'm sure, even with the English language, I'm sure you can tell that sometimes you don't understand the concept, let alone adding another language like on top of it. It was a challenge I pulled through. I'm now bilingual. And now looking for a job, COVID happened, and I got to the UK. And I'm also going through a different season altogether with the different challenges that comes with. So it was just, you know, get to know how you keep going. Now, in your final words, all right, there's someone who is in medical school, or there's a techie out there who is probably even thinking about now going to start their medical journey, whichever way. whether a guy, whether a girl, whichever, if there's some good advice you can give from where you are standing now, looking back, what is the best advice you give to someone?
I would say consistency over intensity. It's better to do a little every day and be consistent than to feel like, no, I don't have the time. No, I don't have the time. So I'm pushing it for later and then I'll just go on a sprint. So just that with what you have. You don't have to feel too pressured that others are ahead of you. Usually the one who's consistent runs the race. So just keep at it a little, as much as you can every day.
Amazing. Dr. Paulina, this has been so fun. I've seen you online. I've seen your articles. I've seen the stuff you do. I wanted to know you on a, you know, more like on a, at a lower level.
You made me talk about some things I don't usually talk about. So.
Well, that's what we do on the Texan Podcast. I've achieved my goal. But definitely, but thank you. Thank you so much for being candid and for being open. I really enjoyed this conversation. More importantly, I would say kudos to you. You have shown a level of resilience that actually even encouraged me to keep pushing in some of the challenges I'm having. And we are looking forward to seeing the next big thing. You know, I'm rooting for you. I'll be here waiting for the next time we'll have you on the TechStuff Podcast. We're talking about progress from 2024 to what has happened after. But thank you so much for making time.
Thank you too. This has been engaging. Yeah. Bye.
The future of medicine hinges on the powerful synergy between human intuition and AI's analytical strength. This inseparable collaboration will redefine healthcare, and future doctors must be prepared to leverage its potential. Thank you for listening. See you in the next episode.